all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Good day. I'm Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today here on Veterans Radio, and thanks for joining us. We've got some interesting stories for you. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web, veteransradio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. And finally, PuroClean. PuroClean is the paramedics of property damage. It provides water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold removal, biohazard cleanup. It also has a focus on veteran franchisees. You can learn more about them by going to puroclean.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today, Russell B. Lemley. Russell, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much for having me, Jim.
Now, Russ is a senior policy analyst for the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute. Looks like 20, 30 years at the San Francisco VA healthcare system, and he was the chief psychologist there in that system for 25 years, so he knows what he's talking about. Dr. Lemley, why don't you give us a little bit more of your background?
Yeah, and that's right. I did work for 38 years for the VA, all at the San Francisco VA healthcare system. And as you mentioned, two-thirds of that as the chief psychologist. I'm a clinical psychologist by background, and I retired from the VA 6 years ago and worked full-time in the nonprofit that we'll talk about in a moment in the interim.
Well, it certainly gave you a long career where you got exposed to a lot of things, and there's a lot happening in the VA world, VA Medical Center world these days, and we want to talk about that. But let's explain to our veteran radio listeners what the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute is about.
Happy to do so. So the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute is a nonpartisan, nonprofit policy organization focused exclusively on veterans healthcare issues in the U.S., and we're led by veterans healthcare policy experts and journalists. And we produce policy reports, analyses, education materials, all aimed at informing these issues.
Well, it's kind of interesting that this think tank came about in 2016, so it's been around a while, and it's was founded by veterans healthcare providers and journalists. Really kind of gives you a mix of professionals you're working with a maybe a larger scope of how they look at issues. You've probably found that interesting since you've been there.
Absolutely. And I hope we get more into that as we talk further. That's right.
Absolutely. So one of the things that caught my eye recently was an article that you wrote in military.com in late February, talking about a bill that's in Congress I really hadn't heard much about, which is called the Veterans Access Act. Can you explain to us, Doc, what that's about?
I can. Let me just give a little bit of context and see if that works. What that opinion piece was about has to do with the impact that the legislation should it pass. And at this point, it has been considered in both the Senate and the House Veterans Affairs Committees, but is on hold, in part waiting for a Congressional Budget Office scoring of how expensive it will be. But it it's in a holding pattern at this point, but and we can get more into that act in a moment. But the context of the whole opinion piece is to lay bare what the future of the VA would look like if this particular act passes other similar legislation on the future of the VA as a healthcare system. You know, since 2014, when there were plenty of kind of media coverage of wait lists across many VAs, particularly at the Phoenix VA, there has been a very steady expansion of options for veterans to receive their health care in the community. And the expansion, because it actually started back right after World War I, that veterans began getting options for care in the community. It started out at a much smaller scale, but we've had nearly 100 years of community options for veterans when their local VA facilities at that point were just generally too far away from where they lived. Once the 2014 Phoenix crisis happened at the VA there with long wait lists, a Choice Act was passed, and that was 2014. It was implemented in 2015, and actually gave rise to my nonprofit because it was beginning to change the nature of the balance between VA care and care in the community. And that balance has continued to shift, particularly with this one bill that, again, we'll get into in a moment. But the context has to do with the balance between these two systems and what could potentially happen in the future if that's not addressed. You know, ironically, at this point in time, community care is the one system that's never going to go away. But there's some danger in which the VA healthcare system internally could be reduced to a very small size and not look at all like what it is currently. And so that's a larger frame for talking about that particular legislation, having this conversation in general, is that, you know, contrary to the way in which it's sometimes addressed in the media, community care is the one thing we know is never going to go away. The danger is what could happen to the VHA.
It's back to that old issue, right, Russell, like, does the exception eat the rule? The rule was, you know, if you're entitled to it, you should be able to go to a VA hospital or clinic and get your care. The government owes you that.
Right.
But when they couldn't, you know, out of the spotlight on the Phoenix crisis and wait lines in 2014, community care now has expanded and continues to expand. Does the exception eat the rule? Isn't that kind of a bit of the concern?
Well, even before we talk about the Access Act, there was a independent review a year ago, known as a Red Team Report, which was looking at just what you just said. And that is that community care referrals have been growing at 15 to 20% a year since what was called the Mission Act in 2018. And at this point is approaching, you know, half of all the care that veterans receive. And the budget is over a third of the entire VA healthcare budget. And it's nonstop. So what you were saying about the exception overtaking the standard, that's exactly right. Is that there? It's a unabated increase year by year by year, and it will overtake the VA. And this Red Team report indicated exactly how that could happen to such an extent that. Within a kind of limited pie, with limited funds, the larger the slice of the pie that goes to community care, ultimately the less it's going to go to the VA, and it will overtake it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and don't get Russell wrong here. We're not saying that there isn't areas of community care that are necessary and appropriate, and a good one that he and I talked about before we got on air was you know, women veterans can't always get the care they need in a VA and have to go into the community, even for such simple things as mammograms. So, but I always get worried, and this is what I want to come back to. These bills in Congress always have these names that are sort of developed somehow in some basement dungeon, I suppose. Let's find a cool name that will hide the real meaning. So when I read something like Veterans Access Act, well, that's got to be good. People yeah. like access for their health care. But you know, I also know that that's part of the game. Let's name it something that everybody will get a little bit fooled by. So what's really in this proposed act?
Yeah. Well, let me just say that I completely agree with what you just said, and I want to reiterate that having care options in the community is an important feature of the entire system. You know, for some of the examples that you just gave, the conversation isn't whether it's a necessary ingredient, because it is. And that's especially true for rural veterans, in which a VA facility, and particularly a VA medical center itself, is not conveniently located. So we do absolutely need the community to supplement VA care when it's at some distance, and then of course when the waits are way too long for the care, even if you may want care at a VA, but the waits are too long, that you may then have the option of going to a community provider. So the first thing that you said, totally agree with. This is not a conversation about whether it's an important ingredient or whether it should be scaled back. The question is really the reverse. And as you're alluding to, there are various bills, and they do come up with acronyms. Often it is the way that kind of bills are often named. And it sometimes becomes easier to remember them because of that, or as you said, imply something. And in the so if we pivot here and just talk about this one particular bill, in the Access Act, there is a component of it that creates a new way in which veterans would be able to access care in the community. Up until now, really, for the last 100 years, the way that the VA system, the healthcare that's provided by the VA is set up, is that the VA will be the authorizer of care in the community when the VA can't provide it in a very timely way or in a very kind of close in distance convenient way. And there are a few other exceptions as well to that. But basically, it's if it's too long or it's too far, then the VA says, sure, if you want to go to the community, we will give you authorization to do so. And here's a list. And there's over 1.5 million providers who are in the community who see veterans on the VA's dime if the veteran qualifies and then exercises the option to get care in the community. The Access Act actually would change that for the first time. And it basically says that the VA would no longer need to be the authorizer of care. It is presumed that if you are an enrolled veteran, you already are authorized, so you can bypass and skip asking the VA for a referral and just go get the care yourself and send the VA the bill. So it's a completely different system that is proposed in the Access Act. And if that passes, and as I said earlier, it's still in the pipeline that it might. If that passes, there will be a further outsourcing of care. The funds follow the veterans care. And under the way in which Congress is thinking about funding for veterans health care, the dollars will flow from VA facilities to the community, and inevitably will have to reduce the scope of what they provide.
Well, you know, just in that simple explanation, I think most of us would say there's a value in the gatekeeper role of saying, yes, you can go to community care, or no, you can't. Hey, you know, we already have those services, and here's an appointment for next week. Why would we send you off to the community for that thing? I can't imagine any kind of set of services where there should be no gatekeeper, and that's kind of sounds like what they're doing here is removing the gatekeeper on where referrals, if you will, should go.
You know, that's exactly right. And in removing the gatekeeper, the funds then become less easy to manage. There will all, if you qualify for healthcare, you're going to get the healthcare. And if more of that healthcare then is outsourced and the money follows it, as you said, without the kind of gatekeeping, there's just less available to maintain the services at the local kind of VA facility. And really what we're talking about here is for those veterans who depend on the VA and the VA medical centers and facilities who prefer that, we're talking about those veterans will in time not have that option.
Yeah, they'll get squeezed out monetarily. The budget yes. will be eaten up, and the thing you can control is your number of employees, your number of medical centers. But is this, as currently envisioned by somebody in Congress, I don't know who's promoting this or what groups are promoting this, but is this envisioned as only to apply to one area of healthcare, like mental health and yes. addiction, or is it apply elsewhere?
Well, it's yes and yes. In this particular piece of legislation, it starts with mental health and substance use disorder care. So the first half of your question is, that's how it's written. But it also indicates that after a three-year pilot period of time, it then is open to all areas and all medical conditions, all psychological and so forth. So although it starts in a more limited way, in the legislation, it says that's just the way to get it started because the intention is for everything.
That's where this caught me as a seismic change and yes. caught me as you wrote, it's transforming the VA's primary role from a healthcare provider to an insurance company writing checks. And yes. that really stopped me in my tracks. Is that where you think this would head?
Ultimately, I do think so. It would happen incrementally because, you know, after the pilot's over and it expands to all medical conditions, there would just be more money that's flowing from the VA to the community. And, you know, once care is provided in the community, the VA has to pay for it. And where's it going to come from? It's just going to come out of local budgets. And so it would incrementally pull money out of VA facilities. I mean, you wouldn't get the upgrades that you need for infrastructure. You won't have as many staff. You won't have as many programs. You'll close units. And then, you know, facility by facility, there will be closures so that ultimately, so this isn't going to happen in just a couple years, but this could easily happen in a decade where you just see closures. And then the only care available is in the community for veterans. And the sad part is that there are many veterans who get all of their care at the VA, and that's by choice. And they will no longer have the freedom to exercise that option because the option will be gone.
If I think about this more, and obviously that's what your article op-ed piece did for me, made me think about it, you could see them saying, well, we don't need to buy the latest machine for MRIs or CAT scans or blood work or whatever, cancer diagnosis. We're not going to make that capital investment in the VA system because we're going to let you go to the community. And you can sort of see that kind of thinking, if it creeps in, it will be ultimately the erosion of a VA healthcare system as we know it. And I think that's kind of what you're predicting, how this over time, the exception could eat the rule.
Yes. Yeah. You know, for veterans who do not want to go to the VA for whatever their reason, and they qualify for care in the community, that option is just going to expand independent of this particular piece of legislation. That's just not going to be threatened. It is for the veterans, you know, who really do prefer the VA. That is what they exercise in terms of the options of where they get their care. Those are the veterans who should, and I said so in my article, make their voices known, because if we wait too long, then they're going to lose an option and it will not come back. And for those who want community care, most of what you and I are talking about is not that relevant, because that option is just going to be there for them always. We're really talking about the veterans who depend on the VA.
Well, and you point out, I guess I didn't know this, that there's a huge shortage of primary care and psychiatrists in the United States and in rural communities. Kind of explain how the VA, because it's set up to deal with those kind of issues, fills that gap.
That's correct in a couple of ways that you're implying, which is when VA's shut down units and shut down services, there isn't necessarily something available in the community to pick up the slack. And so it's not inconceivable that there are just going to be much longer waits when the VA closes down different aspects of what it now offers. There aren't enough primary care providers, there aren't enough psychiatrists, there aren't enough healthcare providers kind of in general that are available in the community, especially in rural areas. And I talk a tiny bit about this in the article, including the fact that many of the rural hospitals are on the brink of financial collapse and closing. And so the services aren't necessarily going to be there when the VA closes down. I don't think that is of major concern to those who are writing the legislation, because, you know, the intention, as it appears, is to just keep expanding more options into the private sector. You know, it's philosophically based on other things that we're now seeing as well, coming straight from the administration, which is that philosophically, the notion of government-sponsored healthcare is something that is out of favor right now. And so whether the waits are longer, whether the quality is lower, which actually research shows that it is, that still is in favor at this point as a model of providing the healthcare for veterans.
We're talking to Russell Lemley, PhD, who is with the, and this is what, you know, kind of caught my attention. He's with the Veterans Healthcare Policy Institute and has written on this issue. Is the Veterans Access Act something veterans should be writing their Congress folks on, or is this so far not going to, you know, so much stuff starts in Washington as an idea but dies in Washington because it's a bad idea? Where do you put this, and what is your call to the veteran world based on your, you know, 40 years of being in the VA medical healthcare system?
Right. I think if you're a veteran and you really would like the VA to go out of business, you could write to your member of Congress and say you're a big supporter of this because it will kind of increase the probability that the VA will downscale incrementally over time. So if you're somebody who has no interest in the VA, you could write and say you're in favor of this bill. If you're a veteran who really is generally pleased with the VA, and actually the surveys indicate that the vast majority of veterans are generally pleased with their VA care, and they would like the VA to remain the primary provider of healthcare systemically, then you're a veteran who should think about writing your member of Congress and indicating that, because the Access Act, unless it is significantly modified, is going to, I think, ultimately reduce an option that for those veterans you really want to see continued indefinitely. And this piece of legislation puts that in jeopardy.
Well, it's a very interesting topic. I'm glad we're able to bring it to our veteran radio listeners early on before we wake up one day and go, well, this is now the law. I didn't even know it was going on, and I wanted to give a chance to voice my opinion. Well, now you can. You know it's out there. You should voice your opinion, whichever way it is. And if you want to follow more about Russell's writing and what the Policy Institute is doing, the website is veteranspolicy.org. This Military Times article and others that you've written on similar topics are there. Russell, I really appreciate the time that you've given to Veterans Radio today.
Well, Jim, I appreciate the time to do this because, as you and I started, this is a opportunity to weigh in before it's too late, and I'm glad that you and I had a chance to talk about that.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org. We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, Legal Help for Veterans, a veterans disability law firm and with a national practice before the VA, can help you on your claims and your appeals. It can be reached at legalhelpforveterans.com or 1-800-693-4800. And PuroClean, a leader in property emergency services. It's the paramedics of property damage, providing water damage remediation, flood water removal, fire and smoke damage remediation, mold and biohazard cleanups. You can reach them at puroclean.com or 800-775-7876. We also want to thank our local sponsors. This would include the Charles S. Kettles chapter of the Vietnam Veterans of America, that's chapter 310, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423, the American Legion Irwin Preskin Post 46 in Ann Arbor as well, the VA Ann Arbor Healthcare System, and certainly the National Vietnam Veterans of America Association. You can be a sponsor by going to veteransradio.org, clicking on the About Us and our sponsors, and help us out. Keep this program alive for the 21 and 22 years. Keep us going for another 20. Thank you.